KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
We do welcome you into the program. It is 6:07 across Mid-America, and it's great to have you with us tonight as we've got you just for 1 hour leading into the St. Louis University Women's Basketball Coach Show. Tom Ackerman's going to be broadcasting that along with Coach Tillett from Westport Social. If you're looking for something to do this evening, head on over there. That's a great spot, and you can enjoy the games, enjoy the fun, and literally the games. Westport Social has fun stuff that you can do there, and enjoy a drink or two while you're there as well. We've got a lot coming up on the program. In about 10 minutes, we'll head to New Orleans. Our guy, Joe Roderick, he is covering the Super Bowl for us. We're going to catch up with him throughout the course of this week multiple times, but Joe is going to be with us at about 6:15. I do want to get into something, so I'll tell you, we did the Gas House Gang today, and it was all four of us, which is Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, and myself. And the before we even started, comments started coming in asking for our thoughts on some things that Jim Edmonds said on another radio station earlier today. Now, if I'm being completely honest and blunt with you, I don't love stuff happening on other radio stations and us spending a lot of time talking about it. Like, that's their thing. But this blew up to a point today where it would be, I think, disingenuous for me not to address it a little bit. So we're going to touch on that a little while later on. I have been, I don't know if surprised is the word. I don't want to go too far into this because I've got a segment laid out for it. But I'll say this just to whet the appetite, I guess you can say. I'm not surprised by the reaction of fans, but I also am maybe a little bit disappointed by it. Because if you really, really, really listen to what he said, and if you didn't, that's okay because it's on another radio station. But if you really, really listen to what he had to say, a lot of the stuff was not new. And the stuff that was new, there was some very contradictory type things in there. So we'll get into it later on. To me, it was more of a nothing burger than anything else. And the social media world would strongly disagree with my take on that based off the reaction to it that I saw today on social media. So I'll give you my full thoughts on it coming up later on. I think they're thoughts that you really haven't seen in a lot of places. And if I'm being perfectly blunt about it, I think they're based in common sense. And we'll get into that coming up a little later on. Did want to touch on Jack Flaherty got a new deal. He's going back to Detroit, the team that he started with this past season, and he got a two-year, $35 million contract. Real quickly, before we get to Joe Roderick in about 5 minutes. I thought this was a really good deal for Detroit, and when you look at the number, part of the reason that I think it was a really, really good deal for Detroit, first off, he had a ton of success with the Tigers this past year. They were a team that really kind of unlocked him once again. He gets a two-year deal that has a base value of $35 million. It might bump up to $45 million, likely to bump up to $45 million. More on that in a moment. But 2 years, $35 million guaranteed. He's got an opt-out after the first year. So just based off of those numbers, let me throw some other numbers at you to compare that to Jack Flaherty. And I know for some people there's a bit of a bias against Jack Flaherty in this town. I'm smart enough to recognize that. So there's going to be some people that hear 2 years, $35 million for Jack Flaherty. Are you kidding me? But if you really take a step back and look at the numbers that he puts up, especially the numbers that he put up this past season, I think that's a value. And part of the reason is that it's a value is because Matthew Boyd got 2 years, $29 million with $1 million in incentives from the Cubs. And I think that the $1 million in incentives is going to be something that's not easy, but going to be relatively easy for him to get. So let's just call that a two-year, $30 million deal. So would you rather have Jack Flaherty, 2 years, $35 million, or Matthew Boyd, 2 years, $30 million? Clearly, the answer is Jack Flaherty. Luis Severino got 3 years, $67 million. Would you rather have Luis Severino at 3 years and 67? Or would you rather have Jack Flaherty at 2 years, 35? Again, the answer, Jack Flaherty, 2 years, 35. Frankie Montas got 2 years, $34 million. So Frankie Montas basically got the exact same contract within $1 million. Frankie Montas got the exact same base contract that Flaherty got. Who would you rather have for that amount of money? Clearly, the answer is Jack Flaherty. Now, here's where the contract can and is likely to escalate from $35 to $45 million. And I do find this to be a little bit interesting. And I think it's what's going to be interesting is going to be how this plays out on if he decides to take the opt-out after 1 year. So of the $35 million that is guaranteed, 25 of it comes in the first year. So I don't know if I would say it's likely, but it is quite possibly going to turn into a 1 year, $25 million deal. So at that point, the annual average value is higher than those other contracts that I just mentioned. Here's the interesting thing about the second year. If there is ever a year to bet on Jack Flaherty being relatively healthy, this is going to be the year. Because of the $35 million in this deal, 25 of it is paid in the first year. 10 of it is scheduled to be paid in the second year. However, all he has to do is start at least 15 games. It does not matter how well he pitches in any of those games. All he has to do is start 15 games, and if he does that, that $10 million second year gets doubled into $20 million. So he's going to start 15 games this year. At that point, he's going to have to make the decision, does he come back for what turns into 1 year and $20 million, or does he opt out of the contract? If he doesn't have a very good year, but he starts 15 games, then he comes back at the $20 million. If he has another pretty good season like he had this past season, then he probably opts out of the contract. He takes his $25 million and he tries again. So it's an interesting deal. There are still a lot of guys out there. The Cardinals continue to be held up by Alex Bregman not signing his deal yet because it's so connected to Nolan Arenado. But what this does is it tells you the direction that the market is moving, because I think most people out there, if you don't have any anti-Flaherty bias going on, and I know I'm talking to a lot of people right now that do, I get that. Take that away for just a second if you'll humor me. If you get rid of a Jack Flaherty bias that you have for whatever reason it's there, and just compare the resume of Jack Flaherty to those other pitchers that I mentioned, Flaherty is clearly the better of those four. Those three other guys got gobs of money a couple months ago, and now we're at a point with pitchers and catchers reporting in 9 days that Jack Flaherty is getting that deal that I just mentioned. So what that tells you is that we've gone over the hump of the mountain and we're starting to come back down, and salaries are going to start to come back now. So I do think that connects to Alex Bregman, because if you don't get your deal done, man, get your deal done. Because the money you're being offered today, at the best case scenario, it stays the same. Worst case scenario, it starts to come back in the other direction. We'll talk Super Bowl with Joe Roderick. He is in New Orleans covering it for us. That's next. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Death, taxes, and Joe Roderick covering the Super Bowl. They can't actually run the event until our guy Joe is there and ready to partake in all things Super Bowl week. And of course, that includes multiple conversations with us here on Sports Open Line. Welcome back into the program. My name is Matt Pauly. Joe Roderick does join us from KMOX adjunct faculty, we'll call him. He's covering for us, also part of the team over at Klabes Online. Hey, Joe, how are you?
I'm doing great, Matt. How are you?
I am good. How's New Orleans treating you?
Man, the weather down here is absolutely gorgeous. I think it says it's like 74 degrees, but it feels like it's in the 80s. It is. I didn't pack enough clothes for this weather. I think I went too warm weather with this. I've been too cold in St. Louis. I know.
Do you buy new clothes in that situation, or just deal with it?
I went and I bought two polos yesterday, just in case, because it does drop a bit at night. So I did plan that. So I went and I got two new shirts just for the week.
Are you like a full price guy when it comes to going and get polos, or do you go find a deal?
Oh my, Matt, I went to Walmart. I think they were $9 each. I just went and got them from Walmart just so I'm not too hot down here.
The percentage of my wardrobe that comes from either Costco or Sam's Club is a high number. It's a high number. So we are like-minded in that area. All right. So set the scene for me. Tonight is the NFL opening night, also known as the big media night. What's going on today, and what is this going to look like?
I am actually walking down the street right now. I am headed towards the Caesars Superdome for opening night tonight. The Eagles will take the stage from 7 to 8. They will clear them out. They'll, you know, do something to entertain the crowd here. And then from 9 to 10, the Chiefs will be there. I'm walking there right now, and the amount of people that are walking there wearing NFL jerseys and doing that, God love the NFL. They found a way to monetize the heck out of watching us do work.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Like, there's going to be thousands and thousands of people that paid money to sit in the stands, Matt, and they're going to watch us interview players.
Yeah, look, the NFL is the best at making events bigger events, ruling the calendar, even the way they do the offseason when they space out the draft and the combine and the OTAs. And I mean, they know what they are doing when it comes to making everything as big as it possibly can be.
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, it's 12 months out of the year. Roger Goodell had his press conference today, saying that they want to be global and talking about all the other places they're going to go. And just see, I mean, I remember like the first year doing this, there's nobody in the crowd. You just walk around, you do your interviews. And I mean, I think tickets are only like $20, but they found a way. So good for them.
But
yeah, like I said, Eagles will be there 7 to 8. I'm sure, and it's always the fun thing. So first, when they send out the list, it's always fun to see which 9 players they are putting on the podium. They're putting and giving them their own podium. There's 10 podiums up there. The head coach gets one, the quarterback gets one, and then you see who the NFL deems as the other stars for the teams. So I always like going through that and seeing that. And I thought, looking at past years, Nick Bolton, who plays for the Chiefs, in years past, he's kind of just been one of those guys that's just out and about in the crowd. And this year he has his own podium.
All right. So of the 18 players, 9 for each, is there a name that most surprises you that got their own podium?
Not really. There's some names I guess I don't follow too closely, like the offensive linemen that are up there. Like, I know Lane Johnson for the Eagles, he's got a spot. He's been the rock of that line forever, but you see who the NFL kind of thinks of the other offensive linemen that get up there. But a lot of it are the stars that you see. Xavier Worthy is up there this year, the rookie. So they've already seen him as being one of those stars. And then everybody else is just kind of sent out on the floor to have to deal with some of the ridiculous people that'll be here doing some of the interviews as the night goes on.
Yeah, the Eagles are an interesting team in that sense that their biggest star is not their quarterback, it's their running back. You know, Saquon Barkley has more star power than Jalen Hurts, where, with Kansas City, obviously Patrick Mahomes is the number one star. No matter how popular Travis Kelce, whoever else might be, Mahomes is the guy. And the vast majority of teams that play in the Super Bowl, their biggest star is their quarterback.
I'll tell you this, I mean, last year, and I would assume this year too, the media pile mass around Travis Kelce is going to be a lot more than it is around Patrick Mahomes. And it's the Taylor Swift factor, because a lot of the media that's here at this event tonight, there's a lot of entertainment people that are here that are credentialed. So it's going to be him just having to field a lot of questions about Taylor Swift as the night goes on. So I do think there will be a much bigger crowd around Travis Kelce for the Chiefs than there will be around Patrick Mahomes.
Does Kelce talk junk about his girlfriend not winning a Grammy?
I don't know if he will. I imagine that'll be brought up. But I think, so last year, I mean, I feel like last year he got a lot of questions about if he was going to propose after the game. I mean, it's a year later now, so I would think that's going to be even more, even a hotter topic this year now.
Now, Joe, I know we're going to go non-football for a second here, because obviously the Taylor Swift question was football.
Yeah.
I know you enjoy getting to as many of the parties during the week as you possibly can. What does your lineup look like when it comes to that?
Looking forward to seeing Chris Stapleton on Thursday. That'll be a good one. That's the Sirius XM concert. Friday is still up in the air. It's either Post Malone or Jelly Roll and Shaboozy. Trying to figure out a way into the Blink 182 concert, though, on Friday. That's the big one on my list that I'm trying to figure out. Or maybe Travis Scott. That's another one for that. So that's just a short list of what I have going on this week.
You tend to find ways to get into the places that you want to get into.
I do, yeah. I learned from one of the best in our friend Ben Boyd. So he taught me well, and I went to the first several of my Super Bowls with him. But now he's big time over there with the Cardinals, so I'm doing it on my own now, and I'm just kind of still doing learning from his ways.
All right, fair enough. How many Super Bowls is this for you covering?
This is number 12 for me. My first one was in Indy, and the only one I have missed was 2021 in Tampa, the COVID year when nobody went. So this is. Yeah, number 12 snuck up on me in a hurry. I didn't realize I was that old.
So again, this is kind of a more of a news topic than a sports topic, but this is KMOX, of course. There's been a lot of news coverage of security and safety and those type of things going on. Having been, and I know you just got here, but I'll probably revisit this question with you as we chat later on in the week. But from what you have seen so far, does anything look or seem different from a security standpoint?
No, I'm actually really glad you brought it up because every year there is high police presence. There's high police presence. You see some military presence late in the week, like Thursday, Friday, you start to see it. Last night, walking around downtown New Orleans, I already saw heavy military presence here. Hmm. Just the huge military vehicles, multiple military personnel just walking around. This is by far the most secure I've ever seen the Super Bowl this early in the week. And 100% it's because of the attack that happened a month ago.
Yeah. One interesting. The Rams played in the first Super Bowl after 9/11. And I remember I was there. I was a little kid. I was there with my dad, not little, but relatively young. And the NFL's head of security had been on every TV network a million times leading up to it. And we're walking across the street in whichever city it was that we were at. And I looked up and I recognized him. And I swear to anything in the world that he's sitting there talking to somebody. And the words that come out of his mouth were, this is paraphrased, but this is the idea. He goes, if anybody knew that, nobody would be walking into this game. And it scared the living you know what out of me, but I still went to the game.
That type of stuff, I don't think I ever thought of it too much until a few years ago. If you remember the MLB All-Star game in Denver a few years ago, where I got there Sunday morning. I think it was like Sunday morning I got there, and there was for the Futures game. Get in there, get right into Coors Field, walk on the field, do interviews. I think I walked right in and interviewed Matthew Liberatore. Right, like within minutes of getting there and get out of there and then see the news like, oh yeah, they stopped the security threat. And it's just like, oh my gosh, like this stuff is like, you know, it's not ones of you hearing chatter. Like it was a big time thing that they had stopped. And I didn't hear about it until people were texting me asking me, hey, what were your thoughts on this? And it's like, look, you're breaking news to me on this. So That's one where, you know, it kind of gets a little too far and it makes you kind of realize just how much those type of things happen and how quick and how good the intelligence and security is around these events.
Yeah, not to go all conspiracy theorist, but I think if any of us knew like even one tenth of the things that are on the radar of the intelligence community, we would just be scared out of our minds.
I'm sure. Yeah. So they definitely have it locked down here. I mean, I am standing here right now looking at a huge military vehicle at the end of the street that is blocked off heading to the Caesars Superdome right now. So they have multiple streets blocked off, I mean, blocks away from the stadium.
Well, Joe Roderick is covering the Super Bowl for KMOX. Of course, check him out as well with Klabes Online. Joe, it's always good to chat. We'll catch up again coming up on Wednesday. Enjoy an opening night coming up this evening.
Sounds good. When are you heading down to spring training?
A Monday, a week from today.
All right, I'm heading down on the 7th or the 16th. So, yeah, we will talk later this week, but we will see each other in 2 weeks from today.
That sounds good. It's a plan.
All right, Matt. Thank you.
You bet. That's Joe Roderick joining us on the program. When we come back, do you want to touch on the elephant in the room in St. Louis sports today? Some comments that were made on another radio station by now former Cardinals broadcaster and former Cardinals player Jim Edmonds. I've got a unique view, I think, on this, unique in the sense that I've seen very few people say what I think, and I'm going to share that with you coming up in just a moment here on KMOX. Back at it on KMOX, it's the Graybar Sports Open Line. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you till 7 o'clock, the St. Louis University Women's Basketball Coaches Show. We'll roll your way at 7 o'clock as Tom Ackerman will be with Coach Tillett live from Westport Social. I always tell you, I'm an open book with you guys. And when I'm uncomfortable with things, I tell you when I'm uncomfortable. And there's parts of me that is uncomfortable with this next topic for two reasons. Reason number one, we are discussing something that the content is from another radio station. It's from 101. They had an interview with Jim Edmonds this morning. That's their thing. I don't make it a practice of taking content from other radio stations and talking about it here. But obviously this story blew up today and I would not be doing my job if I didn't talk about it. The other thing is I make it a policy of mine to not be critical of other broadcasters for their broadcasting work. It's just, I know a lot of people really like Jim Edmonds and a lot of people really do not like Jim Edmonds as a broadcaster. I try not to go down that path however I feel about the guy as a broadcaster. Cause I don't know. I've just never been one I can be critical of a lot of things. I don't like being critical of other broadcasters. I think as a broadcaster, when you are critical of other broadcasters, it sounds incredibly petty. And I don't want to sound that way. So I have made it a practice of mine to not be critical of other broadcasters. That being said, like I said, if I didn't address this, because this has been the number one sports story in St. Louis today, if I didn't address it, I wouldn't be doing my job. So let's go here for a second. And if you're, I don't want to like direct you to 101. There are competitors, right? So that's another reason I don't love talking about it. So I'll try to kind of give you some of the background. So Jim Edmonds was on with 101 earlier today, did a long interview with Tim McKernan, Doug Vaughn, Martin Kilcoyne, all people that I have a ton of respect for. I did not particularly like what Jim Edmonds had to say today, but more than that, I was more disappointed in the reaction to it. Let's start with what he got right, because we have talked about this a lot. The Cardinals have become too insular. They, over the last however many years, they became more closed off to the outside world, always promoting from within. And rightfully so, too. Like, not that I could ever disagree with any of those decisions in the moment. It's just the collective decisions to do that. But they were having a ton of success. So, of course, you want to push up people who are part of a very successful organization. But what has resulted in that is, I think, a lack of thoughts. There's been a lot of groupthink going on inside the organization. They have, this offseason, they have addressed that. They have approached it in a big way, bringing in Rob Serfolio and then the crew below Rob Serfolio with Larry Day and everybody else. And even when I talked to John Mozeliak a few weeks ago on the Countdown show, he talked about how much more collaboration there is going on right now in the front office with all these new eyes and ears and views and everything. So that's been a really good thing. That's been a really good thing. Got a little bit insular, and now they're trying to work through that. So when Edmonds makes his comments about maybe the team being somewhat closed off to people kind of coming in and being part of it, that doesn't shock me because of what I've seen. But at the same time, I don't think that's like new. I don't think that's breaking news or anything. The reaction to this has been frustrating to me because the stuff that Edmonds said that really has a lot of credibility to it, or that he was correct about is nothing new. It's something that we've been talking about, and it's something that has led to this organizational reset that's going on right now that has resulted in Chaim Bloom's going to take over as the president of baseball operations next year. Here's where I got frustrated, honestly, listening today. So Edmonds, at one moment, said how much he likes Oliver Marmol, how much he likes the DeWitts, how much he likes John Mozeliak. But then moments later, he talked about issues that are in the organization, and they're going from top to bottom, and he's talked to everybody, and he's not getting the response that he wants to get. Like, those two things don't really work out well together. You can't sit there and tell me, well, I like this guy and I like this guy and I think the world of these people, and those three people that are most responsible for the current state of the St. Louis Cardinals. Bill DeWitt, or both Bill DeWitt, so I guess four people, John Mozeliak and Oliver Marmol. So you tell me how much you love them, but then you talk bad about the way the organization is doing things. Like, those two things just don't jive together. He spoke about a feeling of the alumni not feeling welcomed into the organization. He was very clear about that. But then he also said, he was asked specifically, well, like, do you talk to other alumni about that? And he goes, well, we don't really talk about that. I don't really have conversations about that. So it felt like he was speaking for the alumni, but then a few moments later, he says that he doesn't really talk to the alumni about it. So I would encourage you to pick this thing apart a little bit more than you're doing. We're at a tough place right now with the St. Louis Cardinals. Really tough place. The place we're at right now is, because people are so upset with this team, and so, like, disenchanted with the St. Louis Cardinals and with the St. Louis Cardinals leadership. This is a large group of people. I don't know if it's the majority of Cardinals fans, but it is a large group of people. And we saw that with the empty seats at Busch Stadium last year. So we're at a place right now when it comes to the Cardinals that a large group of people, anytime something negative is said about the team, they immediately glom onto it. And then we start getting the narratives of, well, this is why the DeWitts need to sell the team. This is why they need to fire John Mozeliak. This is why they need to fire Oliver Marmol. This is why they need to do this, and this is why they need to do that. Just a little kernel of negativity said about the team from a high-profile person. And I think for many people, as opposed to really listening and dissecting and being discerning about what is being said, it is just another opportunity to puff out a chest and say, you see, this is why I say all these things. I'm not telling you that everything Edmund said today was incorrect. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is there were things that he said where he talked out of both sides of his mouth, and a group of people, whether it's on social media or elsewhere, are choosing to only jump on one side of what he said. And honestly, I am dedicating precious KMOX airwaves time to this, and I didn't want to talk about it very long, but I did want to at least address it. Honestly, I don't think what he said today has warranted the response. I don't think he said that much. I think it was more of a nothing burger than anything else. But it was a high-profile person saying something that had a negative connotation towards the team, and because of where the team is at right now, people took the opportunity to jump all over it. That's my take. I know that's not a popular take. I know that if I were to say that on social media, I would get shot down very quickly by a lot of people, but that's my take on what was said today by Jim Edmonds, who was exiting the broadcast booth, TV broadcast booth for the Cardinals. We are going to come back and we're going to shift gears. We're going to talk some soccer, City SC gearing up for their season. We've got some audio to play for you coming up in just a moment here on KMOX.
Whoa. Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Starting to wrap things up on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. We are done early today because we got to head over to Westport Social for the St. Louis University Women's Basketball Coaches Show tonight. Tom Ackerman is going to be with Coach Tillett for the next hour starting just after the 7 o'clock news. So stay tuned for that. Or if you're looking for something to do, you're in the area of Westport, stop on by the great establishment, Westport Social. I've been there a couple times. Always, you got games that you're able to play, good drinks, good everything. So Westport Social is a really, really cool place, and tonight it's that much cooler because you got the Women's Basketball Coaches Show going on. So we've got something new here at KMOX as our good friend Jen Cease is going to be hosting the City Spotlight podcast, and it's going to be available wherever you get your podcast, of course, via the Odyssey app. We'll probably get Jen on later on this week to talk a little bit more about that. It's going to really feature her conversations that she has with various city players. You're going to hear a lot of what you're about to hear on that podcast, every time the new episode does drop. But wanted to talk a little City SC before we do get out of here, because they held their media day here recently, and there were some interesting things that were said. So let's just roll through some of what was said. We'll start with Sporting Director Lutz Pfannenstiel. He was asked, I found this answer to be very interesting. He was asked whether or not this is the most talented roster that he has assembled.
It's tough to say. I think we had always a talented roster, but if you're looking purely at numbers and names, we probably had the weakest roster in year one, and we won the Western Conference. We had a bit of a better roster in year two, and we didn't make the playoffs. So I think it's, as you said, very early doors. You can't really say too much about it yet. We still have a transfer window which is not closed. So I think that's the beauty about preseason, that you can watch and you can analyze, and the two of us sit together every evening to see is there still something we want to do, or are we happy with that what's available. So yeah, I think we have a talented one, but I don't think you can compare roster 1, 2, and 3. They know us, they know how we play. Now we having a few surprise elements again, obviously, with different players and also a new coach. But we will figure that out once the season is on the way.
Of course, City going in to a year with a new head coach as Olaf Melberg is in that position. They've been going through a training camp here now for a while as they were in St. Louis. They went to Florida, back in St. Louis, and he gave his general thoughts on how camp has been going so far.
It's going well, I think. It's been a good camp. We've been working hard, trained a lot, so we were a little bit... We were very heavy actually in the first game, so struggled a little bit, especially our attacking wasn't good enough. We worked a little bit on our freshness for the second game and played really well. So overall, they worked hard, obviously from a physical point of view, but also tactically, and pleasantly surprised how well things have worked so far.
And he certainly likes how his team is currently progressing.
I think especially in the last game now we played against New York Red Bulls, you could really see the energy. It was tough earlier in the preseason and for the first game because we were quite heavy. We trained a lot in the days before that, a few double sessions just before that game. I think when everything comes together and they're really starting to understand the way we want to play with intensity and what that means for us, and we definitely saw some good signs of that in especially in the game against Red Bulls, and also in training as well.
Obviously, last season was a disappointment, and that may not even be a strong enough word. Last year was a disappointment for City SC coming off that spectacular first season of existence, and at times it feels like as City goes or as Klaus goes, City goes. And maybe that's not fair. Maybe that's putting too much pressure on him, but he's the designated player. He's a designated player that goes along with just kind of that role. And we saw what he can do and how impactful he can be there in the first season. So hoping for a big bounce back from Klaus this year. And Melberg was asked about Klaus and where he's at right now.
There's a lot of focus on the tactical and the physical aspects. So I think we've got him and the others as well. Still got some work to do in the technical abilities, and we haven't worked so much in detail yet in the final third. So I think things will improve in that area over the coming weeks.
So he didn't really say all that, you know, specific about Klaus there, kind of talked more generally about the team and where they're at as they're still trying to put things together for sure. But Klaus talked to Jen Cees himself, and he says he's really enjoying this challenge of having a new coach and everything that goes along with that.
So he's excited when you have a new philosophy, you learn new things, you have a coach, so you're trying to figure out him, what he wants from you on the field, and this makes you better. Also having a lot of competition in the team, a lot of qualities. So the training's been really, really good, and that helped us.
And to that end, specifically, he likes the approach that Melberg is bringing to the job every day.
Definitely, he has a lot of European things in his style. He has a different philosophy. We are trying to understand what he wants from us, which kind of movements he wants. It's been nice to learn from him and build for the season.
That's Klaus. Before you heard that, you heard from Lutz Fahnestiel. You heard from Olaf Melberg. And again, you're going to hear a lot more of that with the City Spotlight podcast, which is part of our Odyssey Sports offerings. And Jen Cees is going to be hosting that. And we're really, really happy that she is adding that to what she already does with us in terms of doing just an incredible job covering City SC. That is it for this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line. Again, we've got the St. Louis University Women's Basketball Coaches Show. That is on the way next as Coach Tillett is going to, Tom Ackerman and Coach Tillett will be together at Westport Social talking all things St. Louis University Women's Basketball. That's next right here on KMOX.